Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Good Areas Live. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. And with me is Jared Kimber. After quite a while, we haven't done these lives for a bit, but you can find them absolutely everywhere. And we were here to preview the Ashes, which starts day after tomorrow. But before we get into all of the fun stuff, I'd just like to tell all of you that all of our podcasts / shows on the Good Areas Network are powered by our supporters on Patreon. And you can become one of them by going to Patreon.com/Good Areas Podcast, and that way you can enjoy ad-free content, talk to us exclusively, give us podcast recommendations, and all of that fun stuff. Now, Jared, it is the most prestigious competition in Test cricket, and according to you, the fourth most important competition in Test cricket these days. What was that like?
I didn't say Test cricket. Okay. I said it was the fourth most interesting. It's funny how no one actually listened to the word. The amount of people I've got messaging me going, did you really say that like Australians like other series? I said, no. What I said was, it was the fourth most interesting series if you've been watching cricket in Australia for the last 20 or so years. And that upsets English people because they only think about the Ashes. But there's been lots of other interesting things going on. The rivalry between Australia and South Africa has been absolutely fantastic for decades. And the Ashes has not been, right? Australia-India has completely crept up. That's a really interesting series, quite often home and away as well. And the World Cups, right? Like with Australia's roller coaster of World Cups and what's going on there. That's all I said. No one seems to have listened to any of the words that I've said, but that's okay.
I think
that's how it worked. That's how you get the numbers, apparently, by people not listening to you.
Also, you definitely get some numbers by slagging off Michael Vaughan. So I'm sure you enjoyed that. Everyone else enjoyed that. And we definitely enjoyed that episode. I know I watched it, and I'm sure a lot of these people did as well. We've got a few people in the comments section. Arco is here, Burrito8, Sheratan KD, Muzammil Taha, Mohammed Sufyan, Ayush. Thank you for being here, I suppose, at this odd hour, because we've both, you know, had busy days, and Jared is currently still unwell, but he's still here to preview the Ashes because it is still the fourth most exciting contest in all of cricket, so it deserves some airtime. And
fourth most interesting. If you see what I mean, this is why this is the problem with humans these days. You couldn't even keep it in your head for 12 seconds.
Yeah, dude, retention times have gone. That's why Rakshit has small ads at the start of these shows now. But anyway, look, the urn still is cricket's oldest trophy, you could say. And this is going to be a very exciting Ashes because for the first time, we're going to get to see bazball in Australia. And I feel like it's a lot more even than other people are making it out to be. But Australia currently are in a bit of a pickle. Firstly, because they've, you know, had two major injuries. Josh Hazlewood had a hamstring niggle in the Sheffield Shield game, and Pat Cummins hasn't bowled a single delivery in quite a while, and we don't think he'll be fit till at least the third test match. Now, there is Scotty Boland and Mitch Stark, of course, and, you know, we're hearing news that Brendan Doggett, who could become the third ever indigenous, you know, player from Australia to wear the baggy green, he will come in as a replacement. How much of a handicap do you think this is for Australia? And also tell me something about Brendan Doggett, because I haven't followed his career, but I can say that he probably has that dog in him, right?
Hey, he's not dogging it. Yeah, I think when it comes down to it, he's kind of a Matt Henry type bowler. So I think he's a little bit different than Matt Henry, but I think if you're looking for a nearest neighbor kind of analysis, he's a little bit like Matt Henry in that he's a seam bowler, wobble ball type bowler, you know, a little bit springy, uses the crease maybe more. In fact, it's a fun thing to look out for with Brendan Doggett. And I'm assuming he's going to play now. He really does use the crease quite a lot. I don't know if I've seen another bowler use it as much as him outside of probably Mark Wood. Like, there's a couple of bowlers who do it a little bit, like, you know, Bumrah and a few of the others. But he's legitimately, Brendan Doggett does move around in the crease quite a lot. And that's someone who probably trusts himself to put the ball where he wants it. And yeah, that sort of, there's a nice energy off his deliveries. I don't know if he's as quick as Matt Henry, and I don't know if he's as skillful as Matt Henry, but he's certainly got some of the attributes of him. And I think that's if that's the kind of bowler that I think he's been like. He's always shown talent. It's just obviously, you know, injuries and everything else have held him back a little bit. I think he's had to move teams of recent times as well. So is that right? Because I don't think he's playing for, where is he at the moment? Yeah, he's at South Australia, and I'm pretty sure he's from Queensland originally. So, you know, he's had some issues with just staying healthy and everything else, but I think he's a fantastic bowler. And like, so Varun's put up 98 wickets in his last 20 games at 21.4. That's true, But it is worth pointing out that Kelly has 21 wickets at 19 in the Shield this year. Hatcher has 17 wickets at 13. Cameron Gannon, who's been in and out of everywhere, has 17 wickets at 26. Perry has 15 wickets at 16. Fergus O'Neill has 15 wickets at 21. Do you see what I'm saying? There's a lot of guys with a lot of wickets. So I think what they're hoping is that he has the game to be able to transfer to Test cricket. Hmm. I think if Jai Richardson was fully fit and firing, they would have gone with him.
Uh-huh.
Right? I still believe that. And I think Jai Richardson might be the greatest player that we never get to see, like, you know, fulfill his talent.
Yeah.
I just don't think we're ever going to see it at Test level now. So, yeah, I think in that case, they've gone with Doggett. I think they think Fergus O'Neill's a little bit too slow. I think that Michael Nisa causes them some issues in the way that they probably want. Like, Michael Nisa's maybe a little bit too new ball dependent. Mm. I think they like the fact he can bat a little bit. But I think with Brendan Doggett, I think they fundamentally believe he can take the new ball, but also still be a threat later on. Right. Yeah. And I think that's the reason we have seen him come in. And to be fair, I don't think it's a terrible, terrible idea.
What are his numbers, Brendan Doggett's numbers, in the current season of Shield cricket?
He actually, you're not going to believe this, but was also injured.
Okay.
So he's only played two games. He took 13 wickets, an average of 14. He took a six slower against Tasmania, was it, or Queensland? Well, it might have been against Queensland, might have been against his old side.
Uh-huh.
There's something there. Josh Ford has said James Pattinson is the greatest player not to fulfill his talent. I think Jai Richardson's as good as James Pattinson, maybe even a little bit better.
I got one
right?
for you.
I just don't think we're ever going to see
Will Pukowski, right? He's in that conversation.
Yeah, I don't know if Will Pukowski's on the same level as those guys. There's nothing wrong. Will Pukowski's very high as well. But yeah, I'm not sure he's quite on the level of those other two, just because I think they are, you know, sort of transformational talents. I suppose bowlers anyway, right? Mm-hmm. I thought Will Pukowski was going to average about 42, 43 in Test cricket, which for this era would still be good. Like, no one's not taking those numbers. Whereas I really thought that in Jai Richardson and James Pattinson, that they could have averaged low 20s in Test cricket over a decent period of time. There aren't many guys who could do that.
True. And I mean,
that's not going to happen now.
There were a lot of comparisons of Jai Richardson with Dale Steyn, I remember early on. And I was thinking about him as well. Yeah. And then I remembered that dude is always injured. And I hope that, you know, he recovers and has somewhat of a career.
He's fit at the moment. Mm. He's there is a chance he plays in this series, especially now with all the other injuries. So he is there and thereabouts, and he's not far away from playing. So yeah, he might come in and play very, very soon. Mm. But yes, you know, Doggett is not bad.
Yeah.
I don't want to suggest that he's I don't think he's on Jai Richardson's level, but I think he's a very, very good bowler. Maybe he's a little bit samey with him and Scott Boland, even if he has a slightly different, he sort of takes the ball away. He has that sort of more natural angle away, whereas Scott Boland, maybe his natural angle is a little bit more back in, but just because he bowls from wider on the crease. But I think he's a clever bowler who's probably, reaching, you know, emotional maturity after a long time.
Yeah, I mean.
It does show there's a couple of backups there. Yeah, for sure.
I was checking his Crick Info profile, and he's a couple of months younger than I am. So clearly, you know, he's an experienced player. 50 first class games under his belt. He's taken 190 wickets at less than 27 apiece. But based on the numbers that Varun just showed me, that means that earlier in his career, he wasn't as good. And now he's brought those numbers down. So I'm looking forward to watching.
I haven't looked at his numbers in great depth. But if you want to know what I think has happened, it's the bubble ball.
Ah, of course.
I think he was because I don't remember him bowling. I don't remember. He was never on my radar, and I saw him bowl quite a bit. I saw him. I actually wrote an article about Indigenous cricketers because there was an incredible moment where, I'm trying to think of all the players involved. It must have been Dan Christian and Darcy Short were batting, and Brendan Doggett was bowling. And it was the first time in men's cricket they were aware of three Indigenous players kind of filling those roles at the same time in a big bash game. And I remember writing about him, and he wasn't really on my radar at that point. So I think, like a lot of these guys, because if you watch him bowl, a bit like that Matt Henry type of bowler we're talking about before, you know, he's got the natural energy. Mm. He is quite clever. You give him a ball like that, and he seems to have mastered it. And he's just difficult all the time.
Mm. I mean, look, I'm really looking forward to watching him bowl. And the comparison with Matt Henry has excited me because Matt Henry has been very, very, you know, successful in Test cricket recently. In fact, wasn't he your most improved Test player?
He was the most improved Test player. I love Matt Henry. I don't think he's on Matt Henry's level, but I think when you watch him bowl, you kind of get what I mean by him. Mm. That, you know, there's something about, maybe even like, you know, like a Mohammed Shami, it's like they don't, and Jason Gillespie would be another similar one, where those sort of guys don't seem to lose pace off the wicket as much as other bowlers do. Uh-huh. There's something about the way he sort of kisses the surface, but still has, you know, so he's keeping that really good energy going.
Fair. And I mean, look, the representation bit is also important over here. If he debuts in the Perth Test, he will become the third Indigenous player from Australia to get a baggy green after Jason Gillespie and Scotty Boland. He'll be sharing, you know, the ball with Scotty Boland. But Jared...
Which is incredible, right?
It really is incredible. But we always talked about that trio of Stark, Hazelwood and Cummins as one of the greatest Test match bowling trios of all time, pace bowling trios. And at Good Areas, we are all unanimously, you know, agreement with the fact that as far as the red ball is concerned, Cummins and Hazelwood are better than Stark. They've lost two of those guys. This is still quite a major handicap.
Yeah, and also we don't know exactly how Boland is going to bowl against England, right? Like he had one of the greatest worldie series of all time against them. And then last time he did struggle, right? True. I don't know if he knew exactly what he was doing at that point. So there's question marks over this Australian bowling lineup right at the moment. I've been saying for ages that if everyone was fully fit, I don't think they were going to start with Lyon. And like Lyon's one of the most important bowlers in that attack now. So that's changed quite violently in a short period of time. If Boland is Boland, and Stark, I think, has been a better red ball bowler over the last little while, they've got, if they play Green and Webster, then they have, you know, a lot of bowling options available to them. I think that is quite interesting from that point of view. But yeah, they went from having by far the best bowling attack to much more similar, like in a couple of pen strokes, right?
True. And I mean,
even if just Hazelwood was available, I think Australia's bowling attack's much better, but he's not going to be there now.
Absolutely. And you know, you spoke about how Boland wasn't quite effective in that Ashes series in England because of the baseball shuffle. They'd bat outside their crease and that's how they kind of negated him. But it's interesting how you speak of Green and Webster because they are two separate lineups that Australia can go with here. Either they open with Jake Weatherall or Manus Labuschagne. Cam Threen comes back into play as a false number three and then you slot in Bo Webster at seven. And then also what you could do is you play Weatherall as the opener, Manus at three, Cam Green goes lower down the order and Webster doesn't play. But how do you not play Bo Webster when he's just taken eight wickets in the Shield game? And he also scored runs with the bat in a List A game. So that's a tough one.
I never thought that Weatherall was going to play. Hmm. And if you go back, every time I've been asked about it, I've said the same thing. Once Manus is the most informed batter in the country, right? And that's not a huge thing because no one else made any runs, as you just heard from the bowlers things. I think there are four guys at Sheffieldshire with an average over 40 at the moment. And two of them are sort of middling journeymen. One's Peter Hanscom, who's got to be about my age now. And the other one's Manus, right? Like there isn't a lot to choose from when it comes to batting. I'm pretty sure he was always going to come back in as an opener because they want Cameron Green at number three and they want Webster in the side if they can do both of them. So also, I think I said on a podcast with Varun the other day, Webster might be the ideal bowler for Zach Crawley. Like, you know, just because he bowls a little bit slower and Zach Crawley will get bored and will chase it and cause himself issues. Generally, it's Webster is the kind of bowler that Crawley goes out to, right? Yeah. So they might want both of them in there from that perspective. Not that you plan your entire side around Crawley, but Crawley batted well against him last time. So they'll have to think about that. And, with Webster inside, it allows Green to bowl a little bit less as well. So you probably just use Green for three spells a test match, maybe the first change spells in each of the innings, and you give him one fast short spell of four or five overs at one stage of bounces to take that off some of the other guys, especially now that Cummins is not playing because he would normally do some of that.
True.
And that gives them just a lot of flexibility, right? Like, you know, they can actually be very, very flexible if they want. They could back carry at eight and go and decide to use Green and Webster as frontline bowlers and drop Lyon. Like they have a little bit of flexibility if they want to go a little bit rogue. I don't see them doing that. It's not the way they kind of do these things. But yeah, it's not the same bowling attack that, like, when I had Australia as slight favourites, it was on the back of the bowling attack and Pat Cummins probably missing two test matches and Hazelwood probably missing one through rest and rotation. It looks a lot different now. And also, I thought England's only chance of winning the series was winning the first test. Suddenly, they've got a much bigger chance of winning that first test, if nothing else, even if it regresses to the mean and Cummins and Hazelwood are fit for the second. It's very, very different now.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, I think Lyon will show short play over here. They're not going to risk going in that direction. But you do make a point with how having both of Bo Webster and Cam Green services and then not bowling Cam Green a lot allows them to have five different paces, right? And that could be, prove to be quite useful at Perth because we know there's going to be, you know, a lot of bounce in that wicket. So I feel like this is the more viable option as opposed to just playing Cam Green and then playing both of Weatherald or Marnus. But then if you do play Cam Green as Cam Threen and Webster slots in below, well, who do you open with, Marnus or Weatherall? Because Jake Weatherall is probably more suited to the opening batting role, but then Marnus is the guy who's scoring ton after ton in the Sheffield Shield.
I think if Marnus is going to bat, I don't think they're going to go with Weatherall. So, like, it's hard for me to sort of tell you what they would do. But if Weatherall plays, Marnus bats at three, and Bo Webster gets dropped.
Hmm.
Is how they fit that side.
Yeah. I don't know if that's probably the right call because I don't trust Cam Green with the ball yet, and you can't risk breaking him again because he's also quite injury prone.
I think, as I said before, that's the point of, I think you can only bowl him three spells a game. Mm. So what's that? Let's say 16 overs?
Yeah.
A game. So I think that's fine. I mean, if he gets injured, he gets injured. There's not much you can do, but I think as long as you don't treat him like a frontline bowler or even a frontline, you treat him almost like a specialist part-timer, right? Like maybe late career callous type of situation. Mm. I think you could do something like that.
Yeah, I suppose so. We'll find out soon enough. We've got one super chat, a generous one from Jessica. She said, can't stick around, have some money. Thank you so much, Jessica. And thank you to all of you people who are tuning in at this hour. And I suppose that's enough on Australia. Can't think much more about them, you know, in terms of talking points. So look, we have some stuff with respect to England, but we shall be taking a short break first. You guys are watching Good Areas Live with Jared and Behram. It's the Ashes preview, and we'll be back in like half a minute. So go nowhere.
Cricket boards actually make watching their games almost impossible now. I spend almost as much time trying to find where I can view it as I do actually following the action. That is why I use NordVPN. They let me find all the cricket I want to watch while protecting me from the nasty side of the internet. Nord will free your cricket matches. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/goodareas to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan plus 4 additional months on top. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Watch every match with NordVPN.
Welcome back to Good Areas Live. You guys are with Behram Kazi and Jared Kimber, and we are currently previewing the Ashes. We've had a lot of conversations about Australia. Now it's time to move on to England. And Joe Root, Jared, has been the best test batter in, you know, the 2020s. He has evolved. He started scoring hundreds. So the conversion rate conversation is gone. People are kind of, you know, having that conversation whether or not he'll overtake Sachin. But in his test record, there is this one slight little thing that he hasn't conquered, and that's, you know, scoring a test 100 in Australia. And, you know, people are confident he'll do it. Matthew Hayden has said that if he doesn't do it, then he's going to bring out his mongoose at the MCG. So we're all pretty excited for that one. What do you think?
You mean his penis?
Yes. By mongoose, I mean his penis, okay. But I'm making the bat joke because only the OGs will remember the mongoose bat.
There's something very weird about Matthew Hayden running around naked and instead of a penis, he has a mongoose. Like there's something.
I've copied Varun's joke anyway. It's not coming from me. But yeah.
I mean, he's been fine in Australia. This is, you know, maybe that was the other hot take I should have done on the Michael Vaughan show when they asked for hot takes. Also, do people not know what a hot take is? It's supposed to be controversial. People are so weird.
So I think
he's been fine in Australia. He just hasn't made 100, right? So he's averaged 36. Ricky Ponting averages, what, 24, 25 in India? Mm. Matt Hayden wouldn't average very much in England. I'm sure that would be less than 36 as well. Like getting 100 isn't going to like change things all that much, realistically. I think England... I think the biggest battle is between Brook and Ahead because of the scoring rates that they can have. Uh-huh. Like if one of them has a big series and the other one doesn't, that could really tip the series quite violently in either direction. But obviously Root has to be near enough to Smith to be able to do that. And he's great at getting starts in Australia. So it's not as like these are a bunch of ducks, right? If you have a look, his median innings are actually absolutely without any issue at all. It's just that he doesn't have the ability to go massive, right? So he's got starts and then got himself out, which is one of the things we've talked about him quite a bit, right? So, yeah, so I mean, I'm not as focused on Root as everyone else seems to be, because I think that Head versus Brook is the much bigger, the bigger swing between those two things. Because I'm not sure that either of them are going to, like, I'm not sure how much I believe that Head or Brook will make runs.
Fair.
Right? Like, I think there is an element where if this is a bowler-friendly series, they both might struggle. But if one gets going, then it is huge for the other side, you know, for the side who has that.
True, and I have a feeling that it might be a bowler-friendly series given the sort of surfaces we've seen in Australia. But the Head versus Brook thing is really fascinating, because we did the whole heavy metal number fives piece and footmarks. So we're kind of, you know, in another one of these series where that is a main battle. But I also feel that Joe Root doesn't have to prove anything, in the sense that even if he doesn't score 100 in this Ashes series, he's still going to retire as a legend. Of course, that's another feather in his cap if he manages it. And he'll also save us from being traumatized by Haydock. That's another thing. But like,
if he makes 380s in this series and they win, does it matter that he, do you know what I mean? I think part of this is I don't give a shit about hundreds.
Yeah.
Right? I'm absolutely could not give a shit about whether you've made 100 somewhere. Right? I would take Root's record in Australia over Ponting's record in India, right? Yeah. Or Hayden's record in England, right? Just because you're getting more runs out of it. Not to say it doesn't frustrate and it's not weird and everything else, but there are plenty of great players with holes in their careers. And if this was a hole against South Africa or New Zealand, no one would even fucking notice it.
True.
Right? No one would even notice it. So over a period of time, what you're really looking for is for him to be able to make runs. He's averaged 36. That's down on what he should be averaging. But it's not like as someone who studies test cricket players, the best batters of all time, right? 36 is bad. There are guys out there who are equally as great as Joe Root with worse records in certain countries than that.
Yeah.
Right? And it's just that in some cases, Stats Guru didn't exist. Right? And it's that social media doesn't exist in those days. And so it doesn't get regurgitated over and over again. As I said, it's very clear that there are other players in who are equally great or on similar levels to him who have also failed in various countries. Right? And so if that's the case, I'm like, yes, obviously England probably need a big series. And maybe it could end up being the difference between them winning and losing a series, right? Yeah. Like, is that fair? Like, if he averages 36 again, he probably doesn't move the needle all that much, does he?
I mean,
right? Like,
if, let's suppose this is a bowler-friendly series and he averages 36 with the bat, I think that's good, right? Like,
yeah, so that's very fair. Very
that's
fair,
not
yeah.
an issue at all. And I wouldn't think he would have underperformed. It's just that, you know, those drawing room conversations when if he eventually does overtake Sachin, people will bring up how Sachin was splendid in Australia. But then again, these comparisons...
He's not as good as Sachin.
Yeah, these comparisons are unfair.
It's almost impossible for Root to be as good as Sachin. Because Sachin has a near flawless record and is always going to play longer than Root.
True.
Right? There's no way Root is going to play from the same age and, you know, for the same 24, 25-year period.
Yep.
Right? And then he has a more flawless record already built in there. So for me, that's... If that's what your expectation is, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
All I'd say is that off the top of my head, Brian Lara averages about the same in India as what Root does in Australia. That he got a couple of hundreds, fine. We still know it's not like Brian Lara couldn't play spin. It's not like Root can't play fast bowling. We've seen plenty of examples of that. So, but yeah, from a fascinating point of view, to get back, I say average of 36 before because that's what he's averaging at the moment. But you're right. What I kind of mean is I think that the problem that England have had with Root specifically is that a lot of their batters have struggled in Australia before, and he hasn't been a difference maker in the way that Smith is a huge difference maker in some of these Ashes, right? Like, Smith's making runs from both ends in Edgbaston in 2019. Root's just never done anything like that before. He's never, you know, and the Australian bowlers know how good he is, but they also know that they can get him out in Australian conditions.
Yeah.
And so if he can break that in the first test so that they're starting to second guess themselves a little bit, because if you go back to the last Ashes, Smith and Marnus were just on Cummins the whole time saying, bring the fielder in, bring the fielder in. He's going to milk you all day. He caused Australia to argue amongst themselves, right? I think you'd have to be pretty honest about Joe Root at the moment and go, he doesn't cause them to argue about themselves in Australia very much.
True.
Right? So they probably need that.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't dominated, obviously. And I genuinely feel that Root getting a ton or not getting a ton in Australia doesn't define his legacy as a test batter, but it does amp it up. We can't deny that either, because people do look at these things. But ultimately, like we said earlier, if he averages 36 with the bat in a bowler-friendly series, that could still be telling. But like, let's take the science out of this, and if you had to make a prediction, is he getting that done in this series?
I don't know, because I don't know what the pitches are going to be like. I kind of think the pitches are going to be a little bit more batting friendly than we've seen over the last couple of years. Based on what Todd Greenberg said, you know, Cricket Australia CEO. I just had a feeling he's trying, you know, they want the wickets to be a little bit longer. So I think if that's the case, you know, that that helps Root a little bit if that's happening. But if not, if it's a low scoring series, there's every chance he, as I said before, he could make three important 80s, right? And not actually get that 100, because it's just going to be a low scoring series. Like if, you know, if it's the India Australia wickets, it's going to be tough to make a lot of runs, right? Those were interesting wickets with the odd lull moments within them, right? Yeah. So, and some of the wickets before that were really, really tough. So I don't know. I probably say it's a 50% chance he makes 100, but I'd need to know what the wickets are going to be like a lot more.
Fair enough. And let's suppose, you know, whether the wickets are slightly bowler friendly or even, you know, at times you get flatter decks and the batters are in business. I genuinely feel England have the better batting lineup over here. You've got Crockett up top. Ollie Pope is always going to be a weak link at number three, but then everyone apart from Kane Williamson is a weak link at number three. Then you've got Root, Brook, Stokes, and the keeper, right? What's his name? I've completely blanked out.
Smith.
Jamie Smith, right? That top seven, I feel pound for pound, might be better than Australia's, because you've got a struggling Usman Khawaja. We don't know.
It's definitely better than Australia's. Yeah. What are we talking about? I mean, it might be.
They're overly reliant on Smith and Head over there, whereas in England, all of these guys can chip in. And even if there are bowler-friendly tracks, Baz ball might still come off, because it's not like the ball will be turning sideways, right? That's what their kryptonite is. And if you go for flatter decks, at least England can ensure that they don't lose games. So I don't know why people are talking of this series as some as a series where Australia are heavy favourites. I feel this is fairly even over here.
I mean, we might be consuming different media, but I haven't really seen that. I've seen, this is probably the first time since 10-11 that most people are giving England any chance at all, which they don't usually. You've got to remember, you have to factor in that more often than not, England do sort of turn up in Australia and shit themselves.
Yeah.
Right? Like, That is a thing that happens. They put pressure on themselves. They cause this issue by only caring about the Ashes, and Australia doesn't do that, and all those sorts of things. And so it's a bit like South Africa and World Cups. It's like that is just something that you can't help but mention when you come into something of this nature. So there's always that. But if you look at the odds, actually, I was going to say I wrote this for the website, but I haven't done it for the website. But if you look at the odds online of the score predictions, so the favorite score that people are betting on at 6-1 is Australia to win 3-2. That's close, right?
Yeah.
The second the equal second favorite odds, the last time I checked, were Australia to win 5-0 or England to win 3-2. So I think that tells you that no one's really saying Australia are heavy favorites. And some of that might have changed since Hazelwood as well. I'm pretty sure I looked at some of those before Hazelwood. But you know, you see that, and you talk about the batting lineup from, I know you're talking about England here, but over the last couple of years, Travis Head's averaged what, 37, 38, 36 in Test cricket? I think that's over 2.5, 3 years now, whatever that may be. So we keep talking about Head, and that's what I was saying before. I think there's every chance that Brooks struggles in his first tour in Australia, and Head continues to struggle, right? Just because we've seen that for a little while. Usman Khawaja's in trouble. The names on the Australian lineup are still pretty impressive, right? But when you look at it, England has been in better form. It's a deeper batting lineup. You know, where Jamie Smith would be batting at what? Six?
Yeah.
For Australia? Maybe even five for Australia? Who's five? No, Head. So he'd be batting at six for Australia. You'd certainly have him as a more solid test bat right at the moment than Carey or Webster. And not that they've actually been in pretty good form, those two. Not slandering them, just to say that Jamie Smith so far has looked a step above them. So there's a lot of talent there, but it's both teams still have the same basic issue, which is they can both be three for not many.
Yeah.
Right. Like, you know, Duckett maybe is the swing again in those top three things, but Khawaja's been in bad form. Manus is going to be playing out of position. Cameron Threen is going to be playing out of position. So, you know, Zach Crawley is everything in the whole Zach Crawley's life has been pushing him towards this one moment. If he nicks off twice in the first test, right. And he's going to start to feel an awful amount of pressure. And they've kind of already intimated that, like, Ollie Pope gets two test matches and then Jacob Bethell could come in.
Yeah.
So it's really quite naked.
True.
Right? From that perspective. And so the difference is that England's batting lineup is a little bit more quality from positions 4 through to position 7. Mm. But Smith can overcome that.
Yeah.
And Head can overcome that. And Alex Carey's been fantastic, as I said, for a while now.
Clutch runs.
So I think you'd still rather have England's batting lineup than you would Australia's batting lineup. But there's every chance that Root is in too early, right? And Brook is in too early. And if the wickets are doing stuff, which they have been for years. Mm. I saw someone a moment ago was like, oh, they're going to be flat wickets. And then if Root makes runs, they'll be green pitches. It's like, Australia hasn't had flat wickets for so long. Yeah. Like, if that happens, even though I'm hinting they're going to be more batting friendly, the chances of them being batting wickets in Australia over the last 4 years, have a look at the Sheffield Shield. No one can hit the ball off the square, right? Yeah. Everyone's got a 6-for, right? like it's ridiculous what those wickets are doing. So it would be, the chances of them being flat wickets are almost none anyway, just because that's not how wickets have been prepared in Australia for a long period of time. And there's other reasons, of course, as well. But when you look at it, England still has the form, I suppose, because essentially, if you're looking at test form, right, England have Smith, Root, and Brook, and Duckett in form. And when you're talking test form, maybe give a little bit to Green because he was good in West Indies on what I thought was pretty tricky wickets. Yep. You'd certainly, Smith has got himself back into form of recent time, and you give a little bit to Carey and Webster, even if they're not quite of the same level, right? It's not the same kind of inform that we've seen with the England batting. And also Stokes got started batting a lot better towards the end of that series, after a long lean period as well. So, you know, I think you have to give England the edge when it comes to those. But you can also see how England's batting lineup can completely fall down.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, that's, you know, baseball in a nutshell. It's part and parcel of the approach. And also, you know, I get how Australia's batting order on reputation looks pretty sturdy, but on form they're not. And England's batters are more in form. So we'll give batting to England. We'll give fielding to Australia, because when Zach Crawley is nicking to Cam Green and Bo Webster at third slip and gully, he's getting out over there. But when it comes to bowling, of course, you know, Australia have suffered that major setback of losing both of Hazelwood and Cummins, and that is a big blow. You look at England, and Mark Wood is probably the most brittle fast bowler that we have come across in this generation.
Yeah.
But Perth will suit him, and it all really comes down to Jofra and Mark Wood, because they've got that X factor, they've got that extra bit of pace. I'm curious. You know, someone suggested in the comments whether they'll bring in Will Jacks as someone who can just be a part-time spinner and then go in, you know, with more frontline seamers. But I was thinking at 8, you'd probably have someone like Cass or Gus Atkinson. I'd probably go with Cass because he's a bit quicker.
It's going to be one of them.
Yeah. And then you've got Archer and Wood, at least in Perth. Then we'll see if Wood breaks down or not, but he's going to play the first test because he's been declared fit. And then you have Gus or Josh Tung. So they could be a handful in Perth, especially if England does decide to go with an all-pace attack and maybe Root as their frontline spinner alongside Jacks or something, right?
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I have been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about batting. Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Yeah, and Ben Stokes bowled fantastic last year as well.
Yeah.
It's just that the issue is, so someone's put a comment up, and I want to explain exactly what I mean by this, where he's basically said, Jared keeps saying that these pitches are more English, but he has a downer on an English bowler, averages 22 a test. Gus Atkinson is not an English bowler. He bowls for England, but his style of bowling is much more like a sort of Australian or a South African style, right? Which traditionally, Gus Atkinson actually would be an interesting bowler on Australian pitches, and he might still be, right? Like, if there's a bit of movement, and the thing with Gus Atkinson is that he's almost that sort of gun barrel straight bowler at times, but that also brings in something. You give him a little bit of movement and he might have some success. I see Gus Atkinson as like a slower version of Pat Cummins. Mm. These days, he's probably not even all that much slower. Pat Cummins is just much more experienced and has many more skills and everything else. But the point being is, if this is a traditional Perth wicket, right, then the English attack looks pretty well suited to it, right? In a way that the Australian one now doesn't, right? Just because of the kind of bowlers that they've got. if it's one of these newer wickets where the ball nips around everywhere, you want the more skillful bowlers. England don't have many skillful bowlers, right? So Potts can come in. Stokes is skillful in his own way. He's not always accurate with his skillful, but he's got a million different skills. And Jofra is very, very skillful, right? But he's not going to play all the test matches. If this is a series where you need skillful bowlers, right, at you know, 85 to 88 miles an hour, that's where England don't have that attack. They have the attack for what test matches used to be like in Australia, right? Those sort of harder wickets. And they have been very clear, and that is what their planning has been. And that's what the issue is, I think, with those kinds of bowlers a little bit. But yeah, I think they couldn't get a better start with their lineup than Western Australia.
Yeah.
And I think it's especially now that that Hazelwood's not around, because Hazelwood's still a pain on that wicket with the extra bounce, right? But you take him away and they're going to get a good start. That's probably where they would have picked to play that first test.
Yeah.
I worry about them a lot more as the series goes on with their bowling lineup. If Jofra and Woody can't bowl all the way through, right? That becomes to me a much bigger question mark of, okay, so you've got the, because what England have is a lot of bowlers who are very good at getting wickets on flat pitches after partnerships happen.
Hmm.
If this is a series where you need to have a Scott Boland, right? Do they have a Scott Boland, right? Do they have someone who can just get big wickets in clusters and clean up in that sort of way, the way that, you know, Hazelwood has over the last 3 or 4 years, the way that Boland has, the way that Cummins has, right? The way that all these sheer bowlers are. And if you look at the way that, Cass is, to me, doesn't look like that kind of bowler. Cass looks like the sort of guy that on a flat pitch, he's just going to keep coming in. Mm. Like, he seemed to bowl last year with a busted foot the entire time. Yeah. But there's not a lot of skill based on his bowling. There's a lot of guts and strength in his bowling, but not skill. And Josh Tung is very similar to him, right? Mark Wood, again, is very similar, right? Not as much hit the wicket as the other two guys and a bit shorter than you. But again, he's very pace dependent, right? This is the issue that I have.
Mm.
With all of these guys. Now, it might be that Jofra is so good with the new ball, and let's say they use Atkinson and these wickets are going around. Like, I still believe Atkinson on a wicket where there's lots of seam should be really dangerous as a bowler.
True.
Right? I just don't think he's a 22 average bowler. Hmm. Right? But Atkinson, as I said before, is more of Australian South African sort of bowler. You give him a little bit of seam movement on top of that, it'd be very, very interesting to see how he goes. I get the feeling that they may not be... I don't know where they're feeling between him and Bryden Cass at the moment, I should say.
Yeah.
But I just don't know if they're going to commit. So I don't know if you saw, me and Bumble did a show and Bumble picked Atkinson to be the top wicket taker.
Hmm.
And I was like, I just don't think he's going to bowl. I don't think any England bowler is going to play in all the games. Like, you almost, at this stage, you almost have to pick Lyon or Stark, right? Just because you think they're the most likely guys to play in all the test matches, right?
That is true.
So I think there's a lot of sort of permutations to how they do it. But I think you're right. The funny thing is that Bashir was being aimed at the Ashes for a long way out, right? And then they've got there. And I think they're probably making the right decision, whether it's Joe Root or Will Jacks to bowl the overs, whichever sort of direction that they go in. But I think if you've brought a lot of fast bowlers and a lot of hit-the-wicket bowlers, surely Perth Stadium is the place to try them out. Right, and see how that goes.
I feel like the conditions in Perth will definitely suit England's bowling a bit more now that Australia have lost two of their main, you know, pace bowlers. But it's interesting, though. So I have the same concerns with Jofra Archer and Mark Wood, considering how they're very injury prone and brittle. And I don't expect them to play, you know, 4 test matches. I think 3 at best for both of them. And Woody could break down in the first one. Let's be real. He had a hamstring scare very recently.
When was the last time he played a test match?
Yeah. He didn't play versus India either. And I actually don't know.
I can't even remember. When was the last time he played any cricket? True. I mean, that's the thing with Mark Wood. If, you know, again, we're assuming a lot with these guys at the moment. You know, Bryden Cass limped half the way through that last series against India and didn't always look in great form.
True.
Where is it? Why can't I find it?
I mean, till you find that, I feel like it's the big question of Cass or Atkinson.
26th of February was his last real game.
Okay, so he hasn't played any cricket since then. And
he played against the Lions and bowled a couple of overs, right? So Cass is about to run in on really hard wickets with bad toes.
Yes.
Right? Atkinson has had some real injury problems at times and has been slowed down because of some of those, right? So there's a lot of questions there, again, on how these guys are going to go. It's not like England is turning up with a bowling attack that is used to bowling in Australia. It's not like they're turning up with a bowling attack that is used to bowling with each other, right? Like, there's a lot of different questions that I think have to be thought about when it comes to that, right? Like, it is a lot more confusing than you would instantly think.
I think Stokesy is the only guy who'll be used to bowling in these conditions, really, out of all of those seamers. But ultimately, they'll have to make a decision on whether they go for Kaas or Atkinson at number 8. I think they start with Jofra and Wood, and I highly doubt that Shoaib Bashir is getting a game at Perth, at least. They could opt to play Josh Tung, or they could go with one of those guys, you know, Bethel, Will Jacks, just as someone who can roll over their arm and provide some buffer overs with spin. But it's interesting how, you know, they sacked Jimmy Anderson for this Ashes series. And it's all come down to this Perth test match. And if I look at all of these tests, right, Perth, then the GABA test with the pink ball, the day-night test, followed by Adelaide, MCG and SCG. I feel like England really need to win at Perth, and then perhaps they can win at Adelaide or the MCG, because if it starts turning in Sydney, then again, Lyon can eat them up for fun. And I highly doubt...
I mean, to be fair, it hasn't spun in Sydney for a very long time. Fair. So they'd be bloody unlucky if it did and they got done there. I think you're right. I can't see how England win if they don't win the first test match, just because... Okay, maybe some of this is... If Hazelwood doesn't play the first two, then it changes a little bit, right? But for my money, if they don't win the first test match and the second test match, Mitchell Starc is playing with a pink ball.
Yeah.
You're at a historical disadvantage.
Yeah. I don't think they have any shot at the GABA, because A, it's the GABA and then it's a pink ball test. In fact, I feel Australia should have done the smart thing and scheduled two pink ball tests, both at the GABA and Adelaide, and that would have given them an edge just because of Mitchell Starc and his existence. But I feel like I'm with Brody over here. He said that when we go to Adelaide, the series will be 1-1. I have a strong feeling England can pull off a victory at Perth, but I have no hope or faith in them when it comes to the pink ball test at the GABA.
No, I mean, if they win that test, that then even if they lose the series, you have to say that that's a fair effort, right? Like, we've had one sort of miraculous pink ball victory over Australia so far with the Shemar Joseph and the Chase, right? You know, a bit more of a shambolic game, which we could have in the Ashes as well. But Australia's just been so dominant in pink ball cricket. And it's not just the bowling. Like, I think Marnus and Travis Head also just make a ton of runs against the pink ball. So they've got specialists of bowlers and batters in their side. And also, you know, you've got a bunch of English players who are coming over who have not played a lot in Australia before, but specifically they don't play a lot with the pink ball. And this is one of the reasons Australia is so good, right? They have played so much with the pink ball. They've played 14 games or something. Maybe is the next best, maybe 6. Like, there's a big difference between the amount of cricket that these guys have played with the pink ball and everyone else. And so it is an advantage. They do have players that it naturally suits. So I think that's a huge advantage to Australia. And like, Australia, like, there's a reason why home teams win, right? And when it comes down to it, it is hard to beat, you know, strong teams, away, you know, whether it be, you know, England or South Africa or India or Australia. Like, it's hard to beat them away. And it's because there are all these little micro things that you haven't even, like, factored in when you're thinking about what's going to happen in these series, right? And that is a big one when it comes to playing Australia.
Also, you know, who hasn't played a lot of pink ball tests? England. They don't do it ever, right? Like, it's only when they tour somewhere and they're having a pink ball test when England would get to play one. I don't even know if they've ever played one, actually. Perhaps in Australia, in the last Ashes, I can't
remember.
They've
got smashed in at least one Ashes test, maybe two. They played that one in against India. Was that at Chennai?
Oh, yeah. That happened, right?
Ahmedabad, where like, no one could hit the ball. Like, you know, they took the rattle out of the ball. Yeah. They must have played... I know they've played them in England, but I don't know if they've played one for a while. The problem with them is they can't really play them in England because of the way the sun works, right? Like, and also, it does get colder, right?
Yeah.
In lots of... Like, you have to play it, like, in the height of summer and everything. So there are some... there are some reasons why they don't play a lot. So they're not experienced with that. And they're coming up against the team, as I said, with specialists. Like, you know, I could be wrong, but I know I've written this before. I'm pretty sure Head, Marnus and Starc and maybe Cummins or Boland, like, just have ridiculous records in those games, right? And so it is very, very tricky for other teams to be able to come in and go up against them. So it's, again, they haven't played a lot in Australia. They're preparing for an Australian series that this isn't. It's a different kind of Australian series than normal.
True.
You know, so there's a few things against them, but Australia is missing its two best bowlers at the moment. It's got Scott Boland, of which didn't go particularly well against them of recent times. Their batting has lots of questions, right? Like, there's big questions on both sides here, which is probably why it's a more interesting series than normal.
Yeah.
Right? Like, generally you come in. So 10-11, I was really confident that England were going to win that series. And did not go down well in Australia when I said that. And then when it happened, everyone sort of looked at it as an anomaly. And I was like, that would just look like a side who was better.
Yeah.
I don't look at this England side and go, they're better, but I can tell you that there's a couple of ways where they're a path to victory for them. But there's also more paths to victory for Australia.
True.
But hopefully that just means it's going to be a good series, right? And we don't have many good Ashes series in Australia. We mostly have shit Ashes series in Australia.
No, I mean, look, the last Ashes series was a banger, and had it not been for that Manchester rain, you never know, England could have won that series, right? And the narrative around Bazball would have been a lot different had that been the case. I feel like this is going to be a fun series, which is going to be a lot more even. And again, I'm pinning my hopes on England to win the Perth Test, because that would make for a great series moving forward. So let's kind of wrap this show with some predictions, shall we? Scoreline prediction for me, Jared, would be 2-2. I say they win at Perth, England. They lose the pink ball test. Then they win one of the Adelaide or MCG test matches and lose one of them. And Sydney's washed out.
I love how everyone keeps telling me that. Everyone's like, Sydney's could be washed out. I was like, guys, it's a long way away. I still think I'm with Australia 3-2, but the Hazelwood thing has shook me a little bit, shook me a little bit more. There's still a path for Australia to win this 5-0, by the way.
Yeah, of course.
Like, there really is.
There always
like,
is.
And I think that I think the most logical selections are 3-2 Australia or 3-2 England, right? But you can make a path. I see a couple of guys in the group saying 4-1 Australia. Like, I think you can make that pretty solidly. It could be as dramatic as Australia win the England win the first test like India did, and then Australia just go nuts for the rest of the series. Like, there's lots of different chances at everything else. There's also chances of, I think it's an El Nino summer in Australia, isn't there? So there's going to be a little bit more rain around in general. So there might be a couple of draws. Like, I haven't seen anyone say anything other than 4 results.
Yeah.
This might be the first Australian series in a long time that doesn't have 4 results, right? Like, it might have 3. There is another possibility of that as well.
Well, hear me out. First, of course, I'm just predicting rain in one of these test matches, so I'm going with 2-2. But I also genuinely feel that Bazball's kryptonite is surfaces which turn and generally spin bowling. And even if they get bowling-friendly surfaces, if they chance their arm, that could suit them. Like, if Bazball works in 2 out of 5 test matches, they could win those 2 test matches. And if you go for flatter decks, well, Australia don't have some of their bowlers either. So Bazball is supposed to work more frequently on flatter decks. So I feel like I'm getting some strong vibes that England are going to pull off a couple of victories over here.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the fact that both teams are heavily flawed, right? And so I would love to say that I was confident in any prediction, but I'm not sure you can be confident in the predictions here, especially with Hazelwood's injury.
Yeah,
right. I think before Hazelwood, even with Cummins out, I think you would have to have said that Australia should win that series, even if it is close.
True.
I think with Hazelwood out, I think you have to, and if he comes back after one test, it's not the end of the world. But I've seen Hazelwood sometimes get those muscle injuries and struggle when he comes back. He's not always a guy who comes back straight away.
Yep.
We don't know when Cummins is going to play, right? We also don't know how Wood and Archer are going to go.
Yes.
Right? Like, do you know what I mean? So there's so many, Australia's got a makeshift opener and a number 3, as far as we can tell at the moment. England's got these huge hopes on Pope and Crawley, right? And that might fall down. Brook versus Head. There are all these different things that I can't even tell you what will happen. And that's why when everyone's talking about Root, like, I think Smith is a more interesting one as well.
Yeah.
If this is a big Smith series, it's so hard for England to win it.
Yes.
Right? Even if the Australian bowlers don't take wickets, it's so hard to win because when Smith has a big series, it's monumental, right?
Yep.
And it feels like you can never get past him. So there's so many questions that I have with this series that I'm not sure I have any sort of answers to. And if also, Bayram, if you look at the last 18 months of Test cricket, making a prediction before a series is about the stupidest thing you can do.
Basically.
Because everything has gone completely nuts.
True. I mean, I did say 1-1 South Africa, India, so I think I'm going to be right over there. But you're right.
You've done well with that.
No way we can predict any Test matches these days because it's just been bonkers. Also,
you've gone 1-1 India, South Africa, and like South Africa could win 2-0. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's the world we're in.
True.
Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's so, everything's so weird at the moment with the sort of results that we're getting. When bowlers are on top, things are more random. And if this is a series when bowlers are on top, it can swing violently in either direction.
That's true. Also, you mentioned how you'd probably have Stark or Gaza as the leading wicket taker. My pick is different. I think Ben Stokes will be the leading wicket taker and he's going to break down in the fifth test.
There's absolutely no way. I would take your money on that. There's no way he will be the leading wicket taker in the series.
Okay. Well,
I'll go Stark.
Okay, you're going Stark. I'll still stick with Stokesy because I feel like, you know, he's bowling really well, although he always gets injured in these five test match series. So here's to hoping that doesn't happen.
I just don't think he can bowl. I mean, I'd be shocked if he just bowls enough, right? Like, you know, someone else has said Boland. The only reason I'm not saying Boland is I'm not sure he can play five test matches either. Like, he's, you know, had little niggling injuries and everything as well. Yeah. I'm not sure there are many people in this series that I would back to bowl in all five tests. And I think Stark is the only one. Yeah. So I'm literally, that's all I'm doing this on is I think he will play five tests. And I'm not sure how many other guys will play four. Mm.
And he'll wreck England in the pink ball test. So that's a lot of wickets for you right there. So,
yeah, so there's eight.
Yeah, I mean, that's a safe bet, I suppose. All right, leading run scorer, I'm going to go a bit funky and go with Ben Duckett.
Oh, yeah. I like that. I'll probably just go Smith, I think. It would either be Smith or I kind of feel like Head could have a big series. No, I'll go Smith.
Okay.
He looks like he's batting magnificently to me at the moment.
You guys let us know your predictions for highest wicket taker, highest run scorer, and eventual scoreline in the comment section below. And before we wrap this up, we've got two super chats to take.
Someone's going Carey.
Oh, wow. Jeez. I mean, that's
now good. I don't know what kind of series ends up if Carey is the leading run scorer, but I want to watch that series.
He needs to come to Pakistan first and take a dip in that Movenpick pool in Karachi, and then he can surely be the leading run scorer in the series. Anyway, we've got two super chats. First is by Arik Genon. I don't know how to pronounce that, but he asks, how of India's loss is due to effectively two right-handed batters? Do you understand the question?
No, but it's about the India series. But thank you for the super chat.
Yeah, anyway. We've got PG back as well, who is asking, how would the red ball ODI be in 2025 with the wobble ball? Now, that's a fun one. And you've probably added 10 minutes to this podcast because Jared will ramble now.
they reinforced the kookaburra. When they reinforced the red kookaburra ball, they also reinforced the white one, and there was an impact. Hmm. But the problem is that the white one eventually just dies off, right? And so you can't get it to wobble as long. So if it was in one day cricket with the reinforced seam all the way through and a hard ball, it would cause chaos. We'd have some high highs, but we'd probably go back to a lot of 220 plays 220 scores, right? Like old school ODI.
Yeah. Well, I think that settles that. And I would love to see a red ball ODI with the wobble seam delivery in 2025, but don't think it's going to happen, guys. Maybe we'll get to see a pink ball ODI before that because we've heard a lot about it. And someone does message the exact same thing. Wow. Touché, buddy. Touché. Anyway.
I have talked to people who know about these things and they think as shit as the white ball is, there's not that much difference between the white ball and the pink ball. And I'm like, then why not just use the pink ball because it lasts a little bit longer than the white ball? But a lot of people just don't see it. But I do think it is worth trialing it in one day cricket or T20 cricket. Just because I think it's a harder ball.
Knowing cricket, they'll do it in the pink ODI in South Africa and none of it will make sense, right? Because
no one will be able to see the ball coming out.
There. That's the sort of stupid shit that we can expect from cricket. But anyway, that's a wrap for our Ashes preview on Good Areas Live. So just before we, you know, end this show, a quick reminder that you can go to goodareas.co and bookmark that webpage. That can prove to be your one-stop shop for all the fun work that we do as part of our team, whether it be written content, podcasts, or videos. And as I mentioned at the start of the show, all of our shows and podcasts are powered by our supporters on Patreon. So in order to become one, you can, you know, go to Patreon.com/GoodAreas podcast, and then you can enjoy ad-free content. You can talk to us exclusively and you can give us podcast recommendations. We will see you quite regularly throughout the Ashes. There's a Kimapa show tomorrow, so lots and lots of content planned. Till then, enjoy yourselves, enjoy the Ashes, take care, have a good one, and goodbye.
thank you for listening. This podcast has an ad-free version via Patreon, where there are also many other extras as well, including a Discord channel where you can chat to me directly. There is a link to the Patreon in the show notes. We are an independent podcast, so support us any way you can. Maybe give us a review, subscribe, or share on social media. All of these things help us. And when it comes to podcasts, word of mouth is always the best way of making it grow. If we had a guest on, chances are their socials are in the show notes. Please support everyone who comes on this show. I am Jared Kimber, and this is my network. But we also have hosts and co-hosts like Bahram Kazi and Estelle Vasudevan. This network is overseen by Nick McCorriston, and each episode is produced by Ishit Kaburka at Sound Potion Studio. Mukunda Bandredi, or Muku as most people will know, is the head of our YouTube channels, and he also helps out with so many other things like the podcast recordings. And there's so many other people we could thank here, but I just want to thank all the listeners and all the people who help behind the scenes that make this podcast work. If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.